And welcome to episode 65 of Speak Beastie for July 1st, 2018. I'm Megan.
I'm Ariel. And today we have a special guest. You want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Beth.
It's
Ben. I can normally be found over on Alohomora, but I am hanging out with these lovely ladies today, and I can't wait to talk about Fantastic Beasts. I have been dying to be on this podcast for ages, and it finally worked out, so I'm pretty psyched.
I can't believe this is your first time on Speak Beastie.
I know.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
Because I think it's been like one or two millenniums since Ariel and I have hosted together, so.
And it's probably been for the best, because whenever we're on together, it's just like a total show. But like sometimes, you know, it's okay because Igor manages to put it all together and make it sound. Oh God, I just made myself sad for a second. Hold on. Igor said he was gonna write a letter, and I was like, "Don't you dare make me read it, because I will cry." And we have not received a said letter.
Yeah, so this was going to be part of our Phoenix Register, but I think that we should start the show by letting our listeners know that our incredibly talented editor, Igor, is moving on to bigger and more magical things.
Such thing exists, but okay.
And we are going to miss him dearly, but we're also welcoming a new editor to the team, and her name is Catherine, so we're very excited for that. So reasons Yay, to be Catherine. Sad and reasons to be happy.
Yes. So that cake for Igor, we always promised we shall give him now symbolically as a goodbye cake. I wish if I was any good at editing, well then never mind, because he's not been on an episode. I was gonna say we could do a montage for Igor, but then I was like, it would just be our voice. Oh, okay, look, it's been a long day.
He promised that he would still be listening and would show up as a guest host from time to time, so we're going to hold him to it.
Yes, and, you know, he has been on, like, the Google Hangouts and stuff, so, you know, I fully expect him to, oh my gosh, when the movie comes out, like, he better. I want to hear from Igor.
Hell yeah.
I want to know his thoughts. He always has really insightful thoughts in the common room. Like, I'm sure we're going to talk about it in main discussion.
Don't ruin it.
No, I'm not. I was just going to say, if you're in the common room and you see Igor's name pop up, like, get ready for some facts.
Oh, yeah.
Because you are going to have your mind blown and be like, what? So, Igor, you beautiful, majestic wizard man of editing, we're going to miss you. But Catherine, you are now our editing witch, and we can't wait to have you and see what magical things you bring to the podcast.
And we apologize in advance.
Yes, profusely. Mostly
just
me.
A blanket apology.
It's going to be a lot of bleeps and a lot of so much stuff.
I'm sure she's heard us, you know.
I mean, I don't know if she would have signed up if she had.
So, Beth, tell us a little bit about yourself, for those of us who don't know.
Sure. I am Hufflepuff, very, nice. Very much a Hufflepuff. And in my Muggle life, I am a software developer. And in my wizard life, I run the content team at MuggleNet. And as I said, I'm on Alohomora, which I love.
Your house?
I'm a Hufflepuff.
What's your
my
Speak Beastie?
My Ilvermorny house is...
What's your Speak Beastie house? Do we have houses now?
Yeah, that's...
Oh, I'm going to make this a thing. I'm going to give us houses.
Please
do. Oh, it's going to be like Sasquatch, Augury, Niffler, and... moon calves. This is perfect. And obviously, Megan, your moon calves.
This is amazing.
Yes.
Can we have like a second Patronus that is just like whatever beast you like?
Yes.
Yes. 100%.
So my Ilvermorny house is Thunderbird, and my Patronus yes. is a dappled gray mare. And if I had to choose my Speak Beastie Patronus, it would be a Fooper, because Foopers are my favorite.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good one. That's really good.
The Patronus that I would pick would be the Taillipo, because I think that would scare some mentors away. Except then I would have to like throw up every time I saw it.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Can my Patronus be a mermaid? Like, I think that'd be so cool.
I think for sure it has to be.
Well, those are not quite beasts though.
But it's what I want, Megan.
Okay.
And I get That's what I fun. Want.
There was a running joke with my college roommates once. Sorry, this is a little veering off topic. That my Patronus was a pear, like just the fruit. I don't remember if I've talked about that on the show before. But like, there was this whole scenario in my head of like everyone's Patronuses being like, "Wow, we're so cool. We scare away Dementors," and then I cast the spell, and it's just like a pear. Sorry, just a freaking pear. And the Dementors are just, like, so confused by it that you can just, like, kind of run around them.
Or anyway. Your Dementor. Your Patronus could be Pierre instead of a pear.
Yeah, that's true. He can be pretty vicious.
Ariel Sasquatch would make a pretty good Patronus.
Yeah, that's true.
He would, but I feel like, you know, I'm running that into the ground. Like... Like, we get it, Ariel.
No, I think it hasn't been brought up in a while.
I literally just made it one of Speak Beastie's quotes, houses.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate.
I do. What I really want is someone to make a Speak Beastie shirt with, like, the crest and, like, our four houses that I need. I can't remember. What was it? Sasquatch, Augury, Mooncalves, and the Niffler.
Yep.
So, yeah. Let's get that, and we'll sort ourselves. We'll make a sorting quiz, like, which Speak Beastie house are you in? And it'll just be, like, random, like, BuzzFeed-type questions, like, of these four things, which do you enjoy the most?
What would you rather put on a bagel?
Yeah, exactly. That's better. Lox? Strawberry cream cheese? Nothing. I hate bagels. Butter. Oh, okay, there's butter. That also.
You don't want to put butter on a bagel? No, cream cheese is the appropriate topping for a bagel.
Yeah.
Cream cheese, I feel like I only eat bagels as like a vessel to eat a copious amount of cream cheese.
Obviously.
That is accurate.
That is what they're for.
Yeah.
It is just a cream cheese platter. Edible cream cheese platter. Gosh, Igor's really gonna miss us. Oh.
Well, I was gonna say, like, I already said, but in the wrong spot.
Resegue.
We actually do have a little bit of news this week.
And now a message from our sponsors. Hey you! Yes you! The magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as $1 a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
And now for the Phoenix Register.
You did it. Good job.
I did it. I tried. There you go, Michael, while you're off petting your dinosaur bones. Everybody's going to be like, what? Yeah, he could have been recording with us, but instead he was like, I'm going to go pet some dinosaur bones. Peace out.
I don't think he used the word pet, but I think that's what we're calling
it. He did. So, In actual news, Mina Lima has a new book where you can go behind the scenes of Crimes of Grindelwald. It's called The Archive of Magic, Explore the Film Wizardry of Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. So a very easy title to say. it features filmmaking secrets and stories directly from the cast and crew. It contains 160 pages and the description states that the cover is modeled after a special item from the movie, so, speculate it looks what like, you will.
Like, there's a nameplate on it with a number that makes me think of, like, a hotel door or something.
For sure. This cover is so cool.
It is.
It looks almost like an old-fashioned elevator. You know, yeah. How they have the thing that you pull in front of the opening, but it looks like it's just closed, so it's...
I see that totally.
And it's very... It's got Mina Lima, like...
Oh, yeah.
Is that the spine on the left, or is that part of the cover?
You know, I don't know. I think it's the spine. Like, maybe we're getting kind of a side view. I'm not sure. But it's very ornate.
That's like a really thick spine, if it is the spine.
Yeah.
Because it's 160 pages, so that's not super...
Yeah, that can't be the spine if it's 160 pages.
Yeah.
So it looks like a...
Oh, it contains removable replicas of props and other material from the movie, so that's really exciting.
So maybe all that stuff takes up room.
Yeah.
So what are these Mina Lima exclusive copies?
They include a book plate inside the cover that is personally signed by Mirafora Mina and Eduardo Lima. It is scheduled for the same day the movie is released in theaters, I guess, to, you know, avoid spoilers.
This is really cool, and I'm really happy that they're releasing it on the same day as the movie. I feel like the last movie, there were these kind of books that came out before the movie came out, and so we got spoiled on some stuff, didn't we?
I can't remember. I think the script was published, like, the day after. But if you didn't see the movie right when it came out, then you got spoiled.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to remember things that happened, like, 2 or 1 or however many years ago.
Like, 1.5.
Yeah. Yeah, because it comes out in November, so.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, so definitely if you want to pre-order that book.
Do it.
Well, I was going to suggest going to the MuggleNet article that says so, but yeah, like, also do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, in news that Michael would have enjoyed, official images were released for the Lego set of Newt's Case of Magical Creatures. Obviously, we got a bit of a sneak peek of the set earlier in the month, but official images were finally released. The set features a movable buildable case containing Newt's magical menagerie. It includes a buildable Arumpet, Thunderbird, and Occamy, and many figures of Newt, Tina, Jacob, and Queenie. It's really adorable.
It's so cute.
I mean, oh my gosh, just looking at all, I love it so much.
So, since I am filling in for Michael, I feel it is my duty to freak out about this as much as he would. And
please do.
And I am genuinely super excited about this. It's really cool. I really like the Lego sets that are a little bit smaller and more manageable because I wouldn't have the heart to, like, build and then take down the bigger sets. But I have nowhere to put him.
Yeah.
So I have the 3D puzzle of Hogwarts that I've never built because where am I going to put it? So I like that this is a little bit smaller. And the creatures that came in it look so cool.
I know.
I'm really excited. Especially the Thunderbird looks really, really cool. Also, I'm noticing in the picture here that it comes with like a little hairbrush and a meat cleaver. Like, it's such random things, but it's great.
Is that what that is?
I think so.
It definitely looks like a hairbrush and a meat cleaver.
You know, the essentials.
It's very fitting, though. It's great.
Yes.
So he can fix them lunch, I guess.
And brush their hair.
Yeah. Oh my god, Tina has a little teapot for the alchemy.
Oh my gosh, it's so cute. I love it. Although, I think of all of the... You know, I was gonna say of all the minifigures, Tina looks the least like she does in the movie, but I'm gonna change that. I think Newt looks the least like he does in the movie.
His hair looks a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the faraway picture of Jacob just looks like Ron Swanson to me.
That's
oh my gosh. Yeah, Newt's hair is something. So they are releasing even more Fantastic Beasts Lego series. It doesn't just include the Newt case and Newt and like basically everyone we just said. It also comes with Credence and Graves, which is very exciting. Looking at the pictures, I would say Credence looks about 5 years old and Graves looks about 95 years old. Tina's hot dog is ridiculously huge.
And it doesn't have mustard on it.
So cute, yeah. Though. And this is. Tina it looks is. Way better than the other Tina, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the so hat.
They're releasing a whole new set of minifigures, including some Harry Potter characters. Yes. But obviously we're fixating on the Fantastic Beasts ones because there's a giant hot dog and Queenie has a giant strudel.
And Jacob has his case of baked goods, which is so cute. Super
yes.
cute.
Oh my gosh, I love it so much. I feel like he looks a bit better in that picture. I don't know if it's just the suitcase or
yeah,
I don't know.
Newt still is ridiculous though.
Yeah, oh my gosh, bless.
He's got a tiny niffler.
Oh my Pickett gosh, he is. Does!
And Pickett is, like, painted onto him as, like, part of his outfit.
I feel like it would have been a choking hazard trying to put...
I mean, it kind of looks like Eddie Redmayne, if you squint.
Does it? Also, I know we're focusing on the Fantastic Beasts stuff, but this set includes some really random things, like
yeah,
Cho Chang.
Yeah.
And an owl.
And Trelawney, yeah. Which I love, but is still a little weird. And Dean Thomas.
Like I love that Harry so is wearing a visor, like, that you put in your car to keep the heat out.
Yeah,
I think it's supposed to be
his invisibility cloak, but yeah. It looks ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a joke because it does not look anything. Like, the invisibility cloak in the movies, like, it looks like this, like, big, heavy, like, ornately designed cloak, and this one looks like a shimmery, shapeless thing. Like, it is interesting. It was a choice.
Like, you know, when you were a kid and you had like a toy set and there was some like piece of clothing or bedding or furniture that was supposed to behave a certain way and never did, and it was endlessly frustrating. Yeah. That's what that is. That cloak is not gonna like function the way that they think it will, but it's cute.
No.
What is Credence holding?
They're
the flyers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think it's the flyers.
But it's obviously made of Lego, so it's like way thicker than a piece of paper.
Thank you, Captions on MuggleNet, for helping me.
I know.
I like the picture of all of them together, just hanging out, having a grand old time. But the Fantastic New Wizarding World minifigures will be available August 1st. I think the Newt's Case one I read will be available before that. I'm not entirely sure. Nobody go into the stores and expect, based on my word,
Ariel
that they will
said
be there.
It would be.
So
she's the worst.
On that note, I'm like kind of concerned about this set in general because Lego minifigures are historically difficult to acquire. For some reason, they are incredibly valuable, and so people will just like buy stores completely out and then sell them at a huge up price.
Markup.
Yeah, markup. Yeah. That's the word. From
I got
from
you.
The original. And yeah, I'm not quite sure why that is. But
because they're jerks.
If you find them and you think you're going to want them, I would not pass them up because you might have trouble finding them again.
That's crazy.
Solid advice.
No idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, people are the worst.
I think historically that tends to be an issue just with minifigures, not with the sets in general. So you'll probably have an okay time finding the case.
Well, that's good. That one looks like more fun.
Yeah.
But now I know what to get Michael for his birthday if I see one.
And literally everyone else will get that too.
Yeah. He will be just swimming in Lego minifigures, which I don't think he'd be sad about.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't think
he'd
be mad about it.
Yeah. But yeah. Ooh. Oh. Oh.
Whew.
I think I hear something.
I don't do it. I don't do it very well.
No. Get Pierre. Get Pierre. Yeah. Hoo, hoo. Hoo, hoo. Oh, wait. I just caught something in my hand delivered by an owl. What it's owl? The post. It's the owl post. If you couldn't gather based on our amazing little skit that we just did. So anyway, we've got a lovely Anne from the common room. It's a really good comment and it's long. And it has to do, I think it was the last episode when we were talking about the IMDb page of just like random cast members and characters and whatnot. And she has a theory regarding one of the characters. So here we go. She says, "Hello, beasties. I do have a theory regarding one of the characters we don't know much about yet in Crimes of Grindelwald. But it's very much a go with me here kind of theory. So go with me here, winky face. Mina Lima has a running gag in both The Daily Prophet and The New York Ghost about a, quote, ginger witch who's always getting up to something, like stealing wigs or interrupting Muggle air traffic with flying pigs. Side note, awesome. Or getting caught in a henna explosion. These are all very real headlines. Check out her wiki page. One of the last people mentioned on the cast list is a young red-headed witch, who might be the one and only ginger witch. Since she apparently was in New York in 1926, I think it would be awesome to have just a background gag or two of her committing some sort of goofy crime or getting arrested. Talk about a super deep cut, though. Thanks for all of your hard work." Oh, bless you, Anne, for thinking this is hard work. you should see what really happens. I had no idea about that. I just, like, honestly, when we were talking about all of the, like, random characters on the episode, I think there was like teenager in house or something like that. It was just, you know, when
oh
you
oh my god, that's so me.
Yeah, like when you watch a movie and it's, you know, like so and so played boy kicking ball or whatever. You never really think too much about it, but the fact that, you know, Anne put these two things together and it could be something, I think that would be cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. I especially want to see the flying pigs, but that's just me. I love pigs and give them
especially
wings.
And
it's
flying.
Just, yeah, I mean, it's like, you can't go wrong. But yeah, I just thought that was a really cool comment. I almost hate how hyped up I get about little things, because then when it doesn't come to fruition, I'm like, aw, but she's Ginger Witch. Like, she was supposed to with the pigs, you know? So hopefully, I don't know. Maybe it's something, maybe it's nothing. We don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah.
So, any thoughts that you have?
I think that would be a really fun little, teaser to throw in for the fans that pay attention to the details. Mm-hmm. Because that's something that Joe always did in the books, but it's definitely harder to pull off on screen. So I think if Mina Lima is able to kind of throw that in there, that would be really fun.
Yeah,
we don't really have a pattern established yet for how they are going to do this kind of thing, mm-hmm. because there's only been one movie so far. So I'm really excited to see if they do, whether it's this or anything sort of similar, where they throw in tiny little bits of flavor that only, you know, eagle-eyed fans are going to catch. That'll make, I think, speculation for the coming movies even more fun.
Yeah.
Well, go Anne.
Yeah. Thank you, Anne. Our next comment comes from Cameron. Hi, guys. Keep up the great work. I'm really enjoying tuning in to listen to your speculations. I've been looking at the Grunewald behind-the-scenes book and reckon the item the book is modeled on is the kind of locker we see Newt and Tina standing in front of in the preview pic. They are standing in front of 2708, whereas this book is numbered 2703. Too much of a coincidence to my mind.
Oh, cool.
I didn't even realize. The book is titled The Archive of Magic, which seems rather a grand title for what is basically a behind-the-scenes book. I believe the Archive of Magic refers to a physical place. I don't think it's in Britain, as we haven't seen it referenced in the books. However, I wouldn't rule it out completely, as the books are from Harry's point of view, so quite Hogwarts-centric. For all we know, it could also be within the Ministry of Magic. I think it is more likely to be located in Paris, however. In the pic, it looks as though Newt and Tina have been caught in the act of breaking in, perhaps looking for clues. So
the Archive of Magic as, like, an actual, like, place.
Yeah.
Where they keep things and documents, and
yeah.
That's cool.
Because they did say the book was, like, the cover was modeled after something important from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That could be more than just, like, a locker. It could be something, the Archive of Magic, a place, actual thing.
It'd be funny if the Archive of Magic was like just a locker room.
It makes me think of
you had to use Muggle like combination locks to get them open.
Oh my gosh!
I'd be like, okay, well, I guess I'm never getting this open.
Have y'all seen Men in Black 2?
No.
Oh my gosh! Well, for anyone who's seen Men in Black 2, there's the thing with a locker. It's, you know, you'll understand. I don't want to spoil it for you two in case you ever decide. to watch, but man, now y'all need to watch it, because that was kind of a good reference on my end.
I'm sure that our listeners will appreciate it.
They're like, oh man, that's totally, go Ariel, yeah.
Yeah.
The locker, yeah, Men in Black 2. I don't know. So stupid. So ridiculous.
I just pulled up a picture of what Cameron is talking about, mm-hmm. and absolutely, this looks exactly the same. So the picture that they're referring to has some sort of icon above the number, but instead the book has the like name of the book. And I'm trying to figure out the picture I'm looking at is kind of small, so it's hard for me to tell what the icon is, but it looks like a beast of some sort, maybe.
Interesting.
But this is super awesome, and now I'm really excited. And the caption of this, I'm trying to figure out what the source is. I don't know if this is a reputable source, but it says that this is the first look of Newt and Tina reuniting. So I wonder if they, like, meet up here for the first time.
They were on the same mission.
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh god, I'm just so ready for the movie to come out already.
I know.
Like, you got their collars popped, like they're real serious about it.
They are.
Like, they go to middle school in 2004.
I just want to point out that I am in love with Tina's haircut for this movie.
Yes.
Way better than her hair from the previous movie.
Me too.
I love it.
She looks more like modern, edgy, like...
Oh, yeah, totally.
Not as much trying to blend in, but more just like, whatever, you know, this is who I am.
Yep.
I'm maybe reading a little too much into a haircut, but...
She didn't have bangs in the last one, right?
No.
Yeah, she is rocking them bangs.
Her hair was like a... I searched Tina on Google Images, and I was like, why isn't the right thing coming up?
I do that all the time.
Why didn't you understand who I meant?
Read my mind.
Tina Turner, I don't care.
Wrong Tina. She's not the most famous Tina. Do you not know of Tina Goldstein Scamander?
I know.
Oh, goodness.
Well, are the owls flying away?
Oh, they're gone.
I think.
I'm waving goodbye, and they're waving goodbye to me.
That's so nice of them.
I know, it's the kind of relationship we have, you know, they really care.
Yeah, that's good. So, today I thought we would do, like, a bit of a deeper dive into Gellert Grindelwald, because we've talked a lot about his casting and our feelings about that. But I thought it couldn't hurt before we start to get sort of inundated with new content, looking at UWB, that we should talk a little more about him.
Megan and just loves to threaten WB.
Yeah, it was a mini threat. But I think it's time. I think you owe me some more content now. Anyway, so Grindelwald, what is his deal?
Well, what is up with that? That's what that made me think of.
So basically, if you've been living under a rock for the past 20 years or so, mm-hmm. Grindelwald was, according to the Harry Potter lexicon, a brilliant, ambitious, and ultimately dangerous wizard who tried to take over the wizarding world starting in the early 1920s and ending with his defeat by Dumbledore in a famous duel in 1945. I know it's entirely new information.
What?
He is 2 years younger than Dumbledore. And according to the description of him in Deathly Hallows, he has curly blonde, shoulder-length hair and a wild, gleeful look about him.
It's not how
and I just kind of picture him, like, really needing to shower, but I don't know if that's accurate.
Is it weird that I didn't know he was 2 years younger? Like, was that common knowledge?
I think it's one of those details that I often forget about.
Okay.
I definitely thought he was older than Dumbledore, so yeah. No, it's not weird.
Okay. I mean, because Johnny Depp is older than Jude Law, right?
I don't know.
He has to be. Like, there's no way.
For some reason, like, the way that, I'm sure we'll get to this, but the way that Grindelwald sort of took advantage of Dumbledore and manipulated Dumbledore, it made me feel like he was older.
Yeah.
But I guess it's grosser that he's younger.
Yeah, Johnny Depp is 9 years older than Jude Law. So, yeah,
but
really
we also know
good
that, like,
casting there.
That, yeah, we also know, though, that, like, that really doesn't matter.
Yeah. No,
to me it does. Because it means they just weren't even trying.
God. So he was expelled from Durmstrang in 1899 at age 16, despite being a brilliant student, at which point he chose to go abroad and live in Godric's Hollow with his great-aunt Bathilda Bagshot, author of A History of Magic. You might remember she had a big snake come out of her at one point.
This is awful. Yeah.
And he decided to go to Godric's Hollow because of the Deathly Hallows and the connection with the Peverils.
You know, I feel like getting kicked out of Durmstrang gives you some serious street cred if you're, like, trying to be evil.
Right.
Because, like, if like, they kick
the evil
you
school
out,
didn't want me.
Yeah, they're like, no, this guy's real trouble. He's gotta go.
And during his stay in Godric's Hollow, he became very close with then 18-year-old Albus Dumbledore and drew the latter into his plans for world domination. Together, they theorized about wizard supremacy, quote, for the greater good of the world, and how to find the three Deathly Hallows, the Elder Wand, the Cloak of Invisibility, and, who knows the third one? The Resurrection
Stone. Oh, I was so close. Oh, man. Oh.
However, their relationship lasted mere months. Grindelwald fled when Albus's unstable sister Ariana was killed during a quarrel, and Dumbledore realized his folly. I would not call that a quarrel.
I wouldn't call it just a folly.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Interesting word choice, but all right.
Yes.
It's amazing to me that they were only friends for such a short period of time. Like, this is really sort of like a summer fling type thing. And yet it had such lasting impact on the rest of Dumbledore's extremely long life.
Yeah. And on the rest of, like, wizarding history as a result.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
And I know it's that, crazy. Like, it's mostly based on the way that it ended, but I think that, you know, had Grindelwald not affected Dumbledore emotionally and then come in and fought with Dumbledore and Ariana was killed during that fight, that Dumbledore would not have had the same kind of residual feelings about it as he does. I think it's mostly based off of how he felt in that situation.
Because, I mean, he very well could have been Dumbledore's, like, first love. And I feel like there would have been a lot of intense emotions, just, you know, even though we say, you know, it was just mere months, that's, you know, they were both teenagers, and for teenagers, everything's just amplified anyway. And then, you know, they've got this kind of relationship where they're friends, but, you know, maybe, well, no, definitely Dumbledore feels more in a different way towards Grindelwald than, you know, he feels towards him. But, you know, regardless, he very well could have been in love. And, you know, that's that you never forget your first love and all of that. But also, they have this huge fight. Dumbledore blames himself for Ariana's death and just like all of that. You know, he's harboring these feelings just of betrayal, of, you know, heartbreak, of, you know, the loss of a sister, just so many things at once. And he has to carry those around for so many years, and he has to carry them watching basically the rise of Grindelwald and all of these things happening, just basically being like, you know, I'm sure every time he saw his name in the headlines, he was thinking of that incident, or maybe even a time when, you know, they were sitting there plotting or, you know, something. And I feel like, you know, for like most like normal people, it's like, oh yeah, that's my ex. We dated one summer and we were teenagers. But like, things like that don't happen around you, where like you plot for world domination and then your sister dies when you fight with each other, and then, you know, you go and try to take on the world and you still bump into each other. Like, that's not, you know, that's not a problem all of us have to face.
Actually, that happened to me last summer. It was a big bummer.
I'm sorry, Megan. But
that's rough.
But it's like, I can almost see the argument of, you know, oh, you know, Dumbledore's harboring too many bad feelings, but no, because it's like there's so many negative things are associated with this guy, and, you know, a few positive, kind of, you know, like, he did love him, and it's gotta be very, like, conflicting, like, just really.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
you. No, you're good. I was kind of rambling, honestly.
You're good. I was just, you made me think about how Grindelwald is a lot more kind of a gray area type of character than Voldemort, and Grindelwald, it's like, you can kind of see where he's coming from sometimes, and like, you know, you're like, this guy maybe has a point, and he's, but Voldemort was just like pure evil.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit, he's a more dynamic villain than Voldemort.
Yeah.
And I think that that makes the relationship between him and Dumbledore really interesting, because Dumbledore is not as, like, determined to take down the evil dude. Like,
yeah.
He actually agrees with a lot of what this guy's doing. And despite the fact that everybody expects him to step in, like, has all these personal reasons why he doesn't want to.
So yeah.
He basically just watches him rise to power.
And
which is really interesting.
I'm so fascinated by what we're going to see in this movie. I'm really excited to see how a younger Dumbledore is affected by this, because it's much more recent for him.
Yeah.
And we know that, you know, a very, very old Dumbledore is still, you know, affected at least in some ways in his life by this event.
Yeah.
And so it'll be really interesting to see how a younger Dumbledore is affected. But I'm also really excited to see Grindelwald in this situation, because we know that he has not stopped manipulating people for his own gain. And to know that even at 16, he was, you know, so politically motivated that he was willing to, you know, manipulate someone who we all can assume, you know, he knew that Dumbledore was in love with him. And so I'll be interested to see if we see any evidence of an impact on him, especially because when we get all the way to Deathly Hallows, or I guess Half-Blood Prince, Dumbledore is still offering Tom Riddle the opportunity to express remorse, and teaches Harry to do the same in Deathly Hallows. And the fact that he, you know, wasn't jaded by what happened with Grindelwald and is still willing to offer Voldemort the opportunity to show remorse makes me feel like something really interesting happened between them during this period of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because well,
that and the fact that he also like uses that, oh, this guy's in love with me to kind of manipulate Credence too.
Mm. Right. Exactly.
Like the whole relationship is kind of queer coded. So I wonder if that's part of his like part of one of the tools that he figures out from Dumbledore is that he can use to his advantage.
Yeah. Imagine how Dumbledore feels knowing that he sort of opened this door up for Grindelwald to do this to other people too.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, talking, going back about Voldemort, you know, he literally did not have the capacity to love. And Grindelwald does. And it, you know, I don't think I've ever been really certain that, like, you know, I don't think it was ever explicitly stated that Grindelwald didn't have feelings for Dumbledore, like he didn't reciprocate those feelings, you know, and mm-hmm. he very well could have, but he also could have manipulated Dumbledore for his own gain. You can still manipulate someone that you care about or love.
Yeah.
It just makes you, you know, emotionally abusive. it just like, I don't know. That's something I really want to see like laid out for me. I want them to tell me like, did he reciprocate those feelings or was he just doing what he did kind of with Credence and doing that whole shtick of, you know, like, oh, like, I know that he's in love with me, so I'm going to manipulate him. Or did it start off as having feelings or, you know, I don't know. I really want it to be known because for the longest time, we know that Dumbledore had feelings for him. We have known that. But
I thought Joe said that something along the lines of that Grindelwald didn't reciprocate Dumbledore's feelings. Am I making that up?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
If it's true, I don't remember. And it's something like, you know, if she did ever say it, it's got to be so important that, you know, we do remember because the big facts are supposed to stick with us and it's just, there's so much information out there. And I think even Megan gets to a point where there's some sort of contradiction about even when J.K. Rowling said when Grindelwald originally died and then, you know, she kind of retconned that and he didn't die until much later on. But, you know, it's just, it's a really interesting relationship. And I arguably like the most interesting relationship because it's not all warm and fuzzy and it's very toxic and it's very long in its duration. Not necessarily like they were together for a long period because obviously even if they were together it was for a few months, but the fact that they were just at war with each other for decades. I want to see that. I mean, I didn't know I wanted to see it explored until we found out, you know, it was all about Grindelwald in Fantastic Beasts. But now that that's the story that's being told, apparently, it's like, tell it. just lay it all out there for me and tell me what happened because it's too, for me, it's too ambiguous.
I found the quote from JKR about Grindelwald. She says, "I think he was a user and a narcissist, and I think someone like that would use the infatuation. I don't think that he would reciprocate in that way, although he would be as dazzled by Dumbledore as Dumbledore was by him, because he would see in Dumbledore, my God, I never knew there was someone as brilliant as me, as talented as me, as powerful as me. Together we are unstoppable. So I think he would take anything from Dumbledore to have him on his side." And then there's a follow-up quote here. I don't know what interview this is from. I'm reading it on like a fan site. The interviewer says, "I wanted to ask you about that because Grindelwald resembles the golden curls. The first person I thought of was Lucifer." And JKR says, "So you can call it a fraternal bond, but I think it makes it more tragic for Dumbledore. I also think it makes Dumbledore a little less culpable. I see him as fundamentally a very intellectual, brilliant, and precocious person whose emotional life was absolutely subjugated to the life of the mind by his choice, and then his first foray into the world of emotion is catastrophic, and I think that would forevermore stunt that part of his life and leave it stultified, and he would be what he becomes. That's what I saw as Dumbledore's past. That's always what I saw was in his past. And he keeps a distance between himself and others through humor, a certain detachment and a frivolity of manner. But he's also isolated by his brain. He's isolated by the fact that he knows so much, guesses correctly. He has to play his cards close to his chest because he doesn't want Voldemort to know what he suspects. Terrible to be Dumbledore, really. By the end, he must have thought it would be quite nice to check out and just hope that everything works out well. So that's kind of sad.
It is really sad. And I think it says actually a lot about Grindelwald that he meets somebody, you know, that's sort of on his level, and he doesn't feel threatened. He immediately is like, oh, I want to work with you. I want to have you on my side. And I think, you know, any other evil, powerful wizard might feel immediately threatened by Dumbledore. And I think at the time, Grindelwald, you know, doesn't consider himself to be an evil wizard. But maybe he does, I don't know.
They always are the heroes in their own story.
Yeah.
So, going back to Grindelwald's kind of timeline here, the next stage is at some point during between Ariana's death and Grindelwald's rise on the world stage as a dark wizard, causing death and destruction, etc. He stole the Elder Wand from the wand maker Grigorovich. By the mid-1920s, Grindelwald was infamous for his reign of terror. He was hunted by aurors from all over the world, but consistently managed to escape. In a violent encounter at a chateau somewhere in Europe in 1926, Grindelwald defeated 5 aurors sent to take him to justice and disappeared. Wizarding World lived in fear, wondering if anyone was safe.
Just hanging out at a chateau.
Yeah, he was like, man, I was just having a vacation. Grindelwald had seen a vision of a powerful form of dark magic called an Obscurus. In 1926, he infiltrated Macuza under the persona of Percival Graves. He was focused on finding an Obscurus, and he developed a close relationship with Credence Barebone. He tried to sentence Newt Scamander and Porpentina Goldstein to death. After an incident where Credence destroyed portions of the city, Grindelwald's identity was revealed and he was captured by Newt Scamander and turned over to Macuza. Again, big news for everyone. This is totally new information.
Is that supposed to be WTF or is WFT stand for something it's like that I don't know?
I think I couldn't figure out what it stood for, but it's some kind of like documentation of source.
What the?
Fantastic Beasts and where to find them, maybe? I don't know.
You did it. It's better.
During his subsequent rise to power as a dark wizard, he built a prison, Nurmengard, to hold his opponents, over the door of which the slogan, "For the Greater Good," was carved. Although he was well aware of Grindelwald's abuses of power and evil actions, Dumbledore avoided having to confront his former friend because he was afraid Grindelwald would tell him who it was that had cast the spell that killed Ariana, and Dumbledore was terrified that it might have been him. However, Dumbledore eventually had to try to stop Grindelwald even at great personal cost. The final battle happened in 1945, the final year of World War II, and the year that Voldemort finished Hogwarts. In the end, Dumbledore won, took Grindelwald's wand, which was the Elder Wand, and that's what we know. I was thinking, it's interesting that he built this prison and then was held in it for the rest of his life. Like, wouldn't you think he would know how to get out?
Isn't it ironic? Don't you think?
I think, yeah, that whole battle, that whole duel is going to be, like, really interesting.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be so much emotion and stuff. Emotion and stuff. Like
emotion and stuff.
Just like there's a lot of levels to that, and I'm excited to see how it plays out.
I feel like, oh gosh, they better do it justice in the movies, because I have just like envisioned just emotion but action and just basically the Infinity War of the Wizarding World.
Fighting and then making out, then fighting.
That's less Infinity War.
That was what I wanted to see in Infinity War.
Yeah. But like me in it, just kind of making out with everyone. Well, that would have been fine. Sans Thanos, like he can snap right off for all I care.
I'm a stucky shipper. Sorry.
I want to be in that stucky sandwich. That's what I want. I want to be stucky in the middle of that, you know what I'm saying?
So,
unimportant.
I do know what you're saying. I feel that.
I just want to mention something that a coworker actually said the other day at work, that Voldemort is, quote, basically Wizard Hitler. And I was like, ooh, that's not true. It's Grindelwald.
Yeah.
And Joe, like, doesn't even try to hide it. It's like, you know, this is happening right alongside World War II. She named the prison Nuremberg, which is, like, you know, the most similar word to Nuremberg. Mm-hmm. And he's German. The subjugation of people who are different than he is, you know, like, it's so blatant.
Oh my god, I know. It's for the casual fan. Like, they just see Voldemort and they just think, oh, who's like the most evil real life person I can think of? So it's
interesting because
it's lazy.
They both are kind of like Gellert Grindelwald and Tom Riddle are both kind of working with the same philosophy of like pure blood is best and there's a particular race that's better than others.
It's almost like racism is bad, you guys. What?
It's almost like it didn't go away or something.
It's almost like it happens to mean you're evil and you're wrong and you're gonna end up with a life if you're racist. And, you know, not to get off track, but you know, Voldemort could have lived longer if he wasn't a racist douchebag.
I just think it's interesting because, like, they're very similar and yet they're very different.
They are very different. You know, I think the biggest difference for me is that Grindelwald seems to, at least at the start, kind of feel like he's doing what he believes to be right. And for me, Voldemort is much more like he is being evil on purpose.
He's just self-serving and that's the end of it.
Yeah. And I don't get that vibe from Grindelwald. And I think he knows that what he's doing, you know, is seen as wrong by a lot of people, but I don't think he agrees. And I think that he sees the people that agree with him and he feeds off of that to go forward and do all the bad things that he does. But
yeah, well, and like at the end of Deathly Hallows, he doesn't tell Voldemort where the Elder Wand is.
Right.
He like sort of redeems himself, even though Voldemort is kind of working on the same idea that he was, that like pure blood is best, and I'm trying to get rid of, you know, certain people for the greater good. It's like,
it's like the most evil wizard of all time was like, holy shit, that dude is evil.
Right.
He would have kicked him out of Durmstrang if he had the chance.
So is it like, it's a difference in character. It's the fact that I'm sure he had a lot of time to think in Nuremberg, probably.
He still had his soul intact, I think, for the most part.
That's very true.
I know there's the whole thing of, like, you know, killing someone damages your soul, but Voldemort's soul was so beyond repair that he had the least percentage of a soul that, like, a person can have. And, you know, even he was kind of doomed to fail from the start because of the way he was conceived. He was never going to be capable of love, but Grindelwald, as far as we know, had a relatively normal childhood. He was just a bit of an evil genius. And it's like totally, it's just, it's just totally different things going on, honestly. Like, and I think to a certain degree, maybe not quite the degree of total redemption, but, you know, maybe towards the end of his life, Grindelwald kind of reflected back and realized, like, I've done some really shitty, messed up things, and I was a horrible person, and I'm not going to give away the location of this wand to this guy who is, like, literally a soulless, just being walking this earth and trying to execute, like, the worst plans. And by worst plans, I mean, like, evil plans, not like they were poorly put together.
I think Grindelwald has a lot more emotional intelligence than Voldemort does.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Grindelwald is very intentional in the way that he uses his own emotions mm-hmm. and the way that he builds off of the emotions of people around him. He's very tuned into that. And I think he, it seems at least, that he continues to, you know, feel quite a lot throughout his story. And I think that there was at least, you know, some amount of friendship happening between him and Dumbledore before things went badly.
Yeah.
And even if he didn't reciprocate the romantic feelings. But with Voldemort, we know that from the get-go, there was absolutely none of that. There was no friendship with anybody. Any relationship he had was, you know, purely motivated by you know, the dark ambition that he had, and that he certainly never even came close to loving anybody. And he also didn't understand other people's emotions and didn't really care to learn anything more about them, which ended up being his downfall. And so I'm really excited to, you know, dive more deeply into Grindelwald in these films, because I think he has more depth to him as a character.
Yeah. And it's...
Maybe it just comes down to, like, Grindelwald was interested in the greater good, and Voldemort was interested in living forever and being blessed.
Yeah.
It's... Not to be... I mean, this could... I don't want to be, like, controversial or anything, but I feel like Voldemort was more psychopathic and kind of antisocial. And Grindelwald was, you know, just like the opposite of that. He was more egocentric. But, you know, I mean, it's like I'm not sitting here and trying to, like, diagnose anyone with anything. It's just character evaluation. Because, you know, when you sit there and you think about everything we just talked about and everything we've read about Voldemort and Grindelwald and just their personalities and how they even... Like, how they acted around other people and how they affected other people and what their followers were like. It's very different cases. And honestly, Megan, if you wanted to jump into what Igor was saying, because I think this is a really good...
Yeah. So, Igor is a genius, and he had a theory that all of the people that are being listed as acolytes on the IMDb cast page are Grindelwald's, quote, Death Eaters. So the title can come from the original Greek akalouthos, which means follower, attendant. And in the 11th century, they were one of the main and most enduring corps of the imperial bodyguard in Constantinople. So this was like a term that the Greeks used to mean like follower. And they mainly used horses, which could be maybe thestrals in this universe. And they were in charge of securing the emperor's safety during visits to cities and all. So I think that's a definite possibility.
Yeah. And the fact that when we were reading the IMDb list on last episode, and we thought more religious, like, I think that's mm-hmm. that's so... Because... Oh my gosh, I don't know. I just think that's so interesting that, you know, that was our first thought, because I mean, you know, why not? Why would we have any reason to think otherwise? And then Igor jumped in with this and we're like, "Oh, like this makes sense." And
he also, sorry.
Oh, no, no, no. I was just going to say just how, you know, the difference between Voldemort's followers and Grindelwald's followers. Like, Death Eaters sounds very non-religious, obviously. But the way Grindelwald's followers sounds like a religious, like, cult. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm really intrigued to see how that plays out.
Another quick point I wanted to bring up before we wrap this up is that I looked up the name origins of Gellert Grindelwald. And in German, Gellert is a variant of the name Gellhart. Ario, you can yell at me if I said that wrong. And it is a cognate of the verb gelten, which means to sacrifice or to recompense, which is interesting. Hmm. And then Grindelwald is a small village in the Alps. And it could also refer to Grendel, the troll-like monster of the Anglo-Saxon epic Beowulf.
Oh. Huh. Just
fun facts for you.
Interesting. Oh, man. This has been a good main discussion. Like, I feel...
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, there are so many things, like, to discuss. Good.
Yeah. I love the sacrificial reference in his name.
Yeah.
And I kind of hope that that plays into the final battle with him and Dumbledore. I don't quite know how, but I think that would be pretty cool.
He sacrifices his, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. if he ends up showing some sort of remorse and sort of giving in to Dumbledore. I don't know.
We
don't know that much about it.
Yeah, because I was going to say, if he sacrifices his wand, then Dumbledore didn't win it fairly. Like, I don't know. And also,
it would have to do with, like, the whole Ariana thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Right.
Well, and, like, if Dumbledore knows that it's the Elder Wand that he has, if he were to, for example, win the wand and then use the fact that now the wand is aligned with him to threaten Grindelwald and convince him to step down or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. All I know is he bests him. He has to, otherwise he wouldn't get the wand. So it can't just be like, I give up. You got me.
But like once he has the wand, like if he were to, you know, somehow get the wand without fully defeating Grindelwald, and then use the fact that now he has the wand, there's no way Grindelwald is going to get it back.
Yeah.
Like, just give in now or else I'm going to kill you type of thing. I don't know. But I'm super excited.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know. Well, I mean, I guess we'll just have to see how it all plays out, but... I just want to see Dumbledore being a badass and totally, like, those two just... Is it weird that I've always imagined it? I don't remember anything at this point in my life. But I always imagined it in, like, this kind of open field. Do they ever specify where it was?
They don't specify it, I don't think.
I guess I just thought, like, a battlefield. It's a battle. I don't know. That's just always what I pictured. So, I don't know. It's like a battlefield with these two just having it out.
This discussion makes me, like, desperately hope that Grindelwald in the movies lives up to my expectation.
Yeah.
Because I want him to be awesome. I want to give Johnny Depp a chance. I want it to be awesome. I don't know how convinced I am that it will be, but I'm allowing myself to be optimistic right now.
I think that's good.
That is good. I'm not going to be optimistic. As optimistic, I should say. It could have been literally any other actor and I would have been happy. But
we'll be up for the rest of the night if we try to talk about
that. Oh, right. I know. That's what I'm saying. Fair. Like, it is what it is. We'll see how it plays out.
Exactly.
I'm not, you know, we're not necessarily supposed to be rooting for the guy.
True.
But, you know, it does make it a little harder to kind of understand him when there's, it's such a recognizable face, and it's also such a controversial face now. So that's why it's difficult.
Do you want to take us into the Newt case?
I do, and the Newt case this week is made out of Lego.
Yay!
So, I would like to talk about the Jarvi. And when I decided this is what I want to talk about, I was searching through past episodes to make sure you guys hadn't talked about this already, and I'm kind of shocked you haven't.
I'm sorry.
So I'm super excited to talk about it tonight.
Yay.
Yeah. So, I am reading from the Fantastic Beasts book here. The Jarvi is the Ministry of Magic classification XXX. The Jarvi is found in Britain, Ireland, and North America. It resembles an overgrown ferret in most respects, except for the fact that it can talk. True conversation, amazing, however, is beyond the wit of the Jarvi, which tends to confine itself to short and often rude phrases in an almost constant stream. Jarvis live mostly below ground, where they pursue gnomes, though they will also eat moles, rats, and voles.
Ugh.
So,
can
I like
they eat cockroaches?
So, I like the fact that this is one of, if not the only, beast that can talk. That is still considered a beast and doesn't have that, you know, beast being question mark about it. And
it can only say rude things.
Yeah, but you can't,
that's
like,
amazing,
really talk to it. I don't know.
Am I a Jarvi?
But something interesting I found on the lexicon is that Jarvi is an old slang term for cab driver, dating from the days when cabs were horse-drawn. But this is fascinating to me because all I can picture is, like, a rude, swearing New York cabbie. Which I'm sure is where Joe got the idea to call it a Jarvi.
Yeah.
I also thought it was interesting on the lexicon it points out that in Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 3, Arthur Weasley mentions a wizard being brought for questioning about some extremely odd ferrets, and that this could possibly be a Jarvi, which is cool. Another thing I found that was interesting was the Ministry of Magic classification as XXX, because I looked up some other beasts that are triple X. The Ashwinder is one, and a refresher on what that is. It's a like serpent thing born out of fire, and it goes and lays, it like hides its eggs and the eggs explode.
that sounds not be practical for like reproduction.
Yeah. Yeah. But like that sounds super dangerous. The Bundyman, which basically rots out the foundation of houses and they collapse. If you don't find it quickly enough. And Doxies, who they have a venomous bite. And so it was shocking to me that the Jarvi had the same classification as those three creatures. But then I also found that a Krupp is a triple X as well. And a refresher, a Krupp is basically a Jack Russell Terrier with a forked tail. And Fantastic Beasts mentions that basically the reason why it's a triple X is, I mean, the Krupp is basically harmless, but if you leave the forked tail on the Krupp, then it can be, you know, identified by Muggles, which would be bad.
They chop the tail off?
Actually, yes. That's what you have to do if you have a domesticated Krupp. Yeah.
That hurts my feelings.
Yeah.
Oh.
But so that sort of made me think that's why a Jarvi is a triple X, because a Jarvi doesn't seem like it can, you know, hurt you in any way.
It can hurt your feelings.
Yeah, it can hurt your
feelings. But some really mean things. Getting down to the root of your issues.
Yeah. But if it looks like a ferret, then it could be mistaken for a ferret by muggles, and that could be a potentially significant issue.
That's fun.
Yeah. And so all this talk about ferrets had me thinking about, actual muggle ferrets. And I have some funny personal history with ferrets. I don't particularly like them. But a roommate of mine in college got one without asking my permission or the landlord's permission. When I asked her to rehome it because it was against our lease, she wouldn't. And so then I had to get the landlord involved. And the landlord told me a pretty hilarious story about why she doesn't allow pets in any of her buildings, and it's because of a ferret, which was funny. And a previous tenant of hers had a ferret, and it got out. And apparently ferrets, like, can squish really, really flat. And so this ferret got, like, between the baseboard and the wall and, wriggled down into the floor below. It just so happened that the floor below was a bathroom, and there was a person in the shower. So the ferret just, like, appears out of the ceiling in the shower. So now you have, like, an angry, wet ferret, like, in the shower with a person, and the person is very alarmed. So yeah, that's why she doesn't allow pets in her buildings.
You know,
that was so gross.
I would welcome a ferret before I'd welcome a cockroach. So
that's fair. But that's a surprise ferret though? Like if you were just, you know, naked and wet in the shower and suddenly there was a ferret.
I think I'd be really excited. I'm like, oh my gosh. I love showers already, but this is even better. A ferret. A surprise ferret.
So I just thought I'd share some fun ferret facts.
A little anecdote.
A group of ferrets is commonly referred to as a business.
that's fun.
Yeah, which I don't know why I find that hilarious, but I do.
It is just great.
And your reaction about trimming the tail of a crup is relevant here as well, because similar to skunks, but less prominently, ferrets have an anal gland that when they get scared, they can use to shoot smell out of. But it doesn't smell as bad as a skunk, and it dissipates more quickly. And domesticated ferrets in the U.S. are typically deglanded.
That's good.
Well, in the UK and other parts of the world, deglanding a ferret is considered unnecessary mutilation. So, it appears
so it's not
that,
good.
It appears that practice is most common in the
US. No, Megan, would you like to be deglanded?
I mean, I kind of. Like, if I had that gland, yeah, no, get that out of there.
Okay, I'm sad I asked now.
It's TMI Wednesday.
So another weird thing I found about ferrets is that they perform a behavior called the weasel war dance.
Okay.
Ferrets are related to weasels. And it's characterized by frenzied sideways hops, leaps, and bumping into nearby objects.
Okay,
despite
like
its
me.
Common name, it is not aggressive, but it is a joyful invitation to play. It is often accompanied by a unique soft clucking noise, commonly referred to as duking.
Oh, this is amazing.
So, this is super weird, and it has me wondering if Jarvies have all of these characteristics as well and are just also, like, rude. So
that's
strange.
not only am I rude, but I can squirt stink at you from my butt. Like, that's
okay.
To add insult
Megan,
to injury.
Again, too much information about you. We get it.
Gosh. No, I got that removed.
Oh, gosh.
So just as Jarvies primarily eat
gnomes. ferrets are also used for hunting, particularly pest populations of rodents. In 1877, farmers in New Zealand demanded that ferrets be introduced to control a rabbit population. And concern was raised at the time that those ferrets might eventually prey on indigenous wildlife after the rabbit population dropped. And guess what? That's exactly what happened. so I wonder if Jarvis are ever introduced on purpose into wizarding populations to control the populations of gnomes and other small animals. But I mean, I kind of feel like I'd rather have gnomes in my garden than a Jarvie.
Your opinion, man.
No, the Jarvie could be really fun.
I'd love to just walk outside, get ready to go to work, and just have a giant ferret shout insults at me. I'd be like, what a wonderful morning.
Well, like, you know, if you started your day with a Jarvie yelling insults at you, everything else that happens to you throughout the day won't be nearly as bad as that.
Yeah, see, you get it. Gosh.
But so interestingly, ferrets are illegal in many parts of the world, including some areas of the U.S., namely California, New York City, D.C., and Hawaii. So, yeah. One last thing, and I think this is the most interesting thing about Jarvis because it loops back into the story of Fantastic Beasts, is that from the Case of the Beasts, there was some reference to Newt's expulsion and that he was expelled for illegal possession of a magical beast causing endangerment of human life and violation of animal welfare laws. And that it goes on later to say that the magical beast was a Jarvie level 3. And so this is extremely interesting to me. This is also where we found out that Dumbledore defended Newt and I guess cleared his name, maybe. But so the fact that he was expelled because of a Jarvie, at least according to the Case of the Beasts, how could that possibly be that a Jarvie was endangering human life? It seems like all they do is just spew vitriol.
I mean,
I can get the animal welfare laws part, maybe, if having a Jarvie is illegal, but endangering human life, I don't get that one.
Imagine if they had a Twitter account, then it'd be a real issue.
What do you guys think?
I still want a Jarvie. You can't talk me out of it. Sitting here trying to
maybe
be like,
they just make, I don't know.
So apparently there
I mean, endangering human life is like if you sneak into someone's shower and they get really freaked out and like fall over and hit their head, maybe.
Well, I think truthfully, you know, not everyone is going to laugh off the insults. You know, I think if they insult the wrong person, you know, who doesn't have... you know, maybe they're very emotional or sensitive or, you know, just very, I don't know, they don't have the confidence or whatever. I think, you know, that could take its toll on a person mentally. And that is part of a person's welfare. It's part of their health. I don't know. Maybe that's a reach, because to me, I'm like, I think a Jarvie would be hilarious, but that's purely speculation. I could, you know, if there was like a real life Jarvie just sitting outside my window insulting me every day, it would probably wear me down.
You gotta get rid of those toxic things.
Yeah.
Like, don't just let them insult you every day.
Yeah. But it's just like they can't be taught any better, any different. They can't you know, magically one morning be like, oh, good morning, how are you? You look beautiful. Like, that's not going to happen. So, yeah, I think maybe that's where they're kind of like, okay, well, we've got to, you know, put three X's on this one because it could be dangerous if he insults the wrong person or whatever. I don't know.
I wonder if the laws surrounding the Jarvi and other creatures like it, I wonder if the laws are very prescriptive about how incidents relating to them have to be handled. Maybe the actual incident with Newt wasn't that big of a deal, but they kind of are forced to treat it like every other incident with a Jarvi, and that's why it's listed as endangering human life, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It does go on to say that the Ministry of Magic Animal Welfare Department was informed of the violation and required to rehouse the magical creature. So I wonder where a Jarvi would be rehomed to if they just, you know, hang out in the wild. Like if you're camping out in the woods one day and suddenly you just are woken up by a screaming ferret.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the Jarvi. I'm interested to know if we'll find out more details about Newt's expulsion relating to the Jarvi.
Oh,
that
please.
Was a fun venture into the case.
It was. For your first Newt case, you did great. Which
now
is
I'll put my hairbrush and my cleaver at the shelf.
So that's it for this episode. Our podcast question is, what are your thoughts on Grindelwald? Any theories? Any hopes of what to see in the future movies? Just let us know. We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets, or you can email us directly at our super exclusive email, speakbeastie@gmail.com. And as always, you can leave us a review on iTunes, but don't be a Jarvi about it.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I only just thought of it, and I was like, I'm going to say it. I'm going to do it.
That's super cute. So you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie. Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. And, of course, you can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/SpeakBeastie. I would suggest that everybody go out and do that.
Oh.
If you can.
Thanks, Beth. And check out Beth on Alohomora.
Yes.
Also, I just want to say, you guys, that I got a Speak Beastie t-shirt, and I wore it to the Wizarding World over the weekend. And
oh, I saw. You looked amazing.
I got so many compliments on it. Everyone was complimenting my shirt. They all wanted to know what it was, and they were super excited when I told them what it was. So... yeah.
Did they listen, or is it just like, cool design?
No, they were like, oh my gosh, what's your shirt? That's so cool. What is that? And then when I told them what it was, then they were all like, oh, that's really cool. And they all like seemed super interested in it. So yes. I didn't run into any listeners, but I ran into people who are very into
future
the shirt
listeners.
And super excited about
it. I am the Elmo fire gif right now.
And how great is it that you were just, like, promoting the show, and now you're on it?
Well, I think it's hilarious that I was with Lizzie and Amy, and I was the one wearing the Speak Beast t-shirt. But theirs hadn't come in the mail yet. Mine came, like, literally within hours of leaving my house.
Wow. It was meant to be.
I know.
All right. Well, I'm Ariel.
I'm Beth.
And I'm Megan. Thank you for listening to Speak Beastie. Case closed. Thank you.
Holy sh! Hold on. Hold on.
What?
Oh my
what?
God. Oh my what? God. There's a cockroach. Oh my God. I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die. Hold on. Hold on. Oh my God.
I can't wait for this to be in the blue.
No.
So when I moved to California, I had never seen the kind of cockroaches they have in California. They have like
a cockroach like, in my room. Can you come get it?
They have like big black ones. They're like totally different.
It's so big.
They're like totally different than the ones that I had seen before. They're like, you know, more flat and brown.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know what it was. And the first time I ever saw one in California, it crawled out of my bed. And I was real upset about it. I was really upset.
Oh my God. I'm taking a picture.
That's disgusting.
This thing is just hanging out on my pillow on the floor like it owns the place.
Oh my God.
Jesus Christ.
My Michael gets flying cockroaches in his apartment sometimes.
Oh God,
and
no.
I'm not about that at all.
Nope.
I've literally never seen a cockroach in my house before.
To not move to the states that you guys live in.
Why is it in here?
Because y'all won't let me put sticky traps in.
I didn't do anything.
I love
you. Oh my God.
Ah! Oh no, this is great.
Am I okay?
Yeah, but these boxes have got to go.
I didn't do it.
I didn't say you didn't do it. What I'm saying is you gotta get all this stuff.
I would like to. A lot of it's not mine.